Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, families, educators, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that shape, challenge, and sometimes disrupt our daily lives. The Politics Rap Team, where high school students from James S. Rickards High School International Baccalaureate IB program weigh in on major local, state, and national issues. Today, our panel takes on timely topics shaping headlines across the country and right here in the community. The federal government shutdown, controversies over Super Bowl headliner Bad Bunny, proposed H-1B visa restrictions that could impact local universities, and the Leon County teachers' pay dispute. These bright young thinkers tackle political, cultural, and economic implications of current events, bringing next generation's voice to the table. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield, and joining me via the Zoom platform, I welcome the Politics Rap panel. If you will introduce yourselves, and I'll start with the student producers, Kaylee and Shahashra.
My name is Kaylee John, and I'm a current sophomore at James S. Rickards High School. Recently, my hobbies have been I've been going to the gym more often. I would say that's a hobby.
Okay. Shahashra.
Hey everyone, my name is Hasra Akula, and I'm also a sophomore at James S. Rickards High School. Honestly, it's not necessarily a hobby, but something that I've been doing recently is practicing dance, since I have a dance performance coming up at an annual event called Glimpses. Oh. So that's been kind of fun.
Okay. Ishana.
Hi, my name is Ishana Ali Babu. I'm also a sophomore at Rickards High School, and I've been trying to read more because after seeing my SATs, like practice scores, I've not been good at vocab.
Okay. Xavier?
Hello, my name is Xavier. I'm a senior at Rickards, and none of these people know the pains of college applications yet. So that's been my life.
Oh, I know where you're coming from. And Jessica?
Hi, I'm also a sophomore at Rickards, and I've been here a couple of times, and I'm excited to be here again today.
Well, welcome to all of you. I'm always eager to talk with you, and we'll start out with the Leon County Teachers Association. Recently, the Leon County Teachers Association rejected a tentative agreement with the district that would have provided an additional $40 per month. That's less than $10 a week in extra compensation. What does this vote reveal about teacher morale and challenges that the educators face? And whomever, you know, think of it, like I said, as this five-way telephone. I'll start with Kaylee. What do you
think? Wait, what's the question?
Well, like, what is this vote? You know, they voted, no, we did not want to take that $40 a month. They voted that they did not want to do that. And I'm asking you, what does this vote say about the challenges that educators face and about teacher morale? What would you think this vote says?
I can start.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'd say the more that I've looked into politics, I think the one thing that stands out very clearly is just how little representation there is for teachers and how little that they get in compensation for, you know, one of the most important jobs in our country. I assume that no one would want to turn down being given, you know, free money, unless it's just such a small change, right? The amount that these teachers need in compensation for the work that they do, working not just the job that they should work of a 9-to-5 or whatever, but, you know, the hours extra grading and helping students prepare and putting in that time to make sure that, like, these students can really care about what they're doing. It's just an undervalued work, and it really disgusted me to see how, the treatment that they get in return is getting offered such a minor amount.
Other comments? Have you had time to think about it?
So I think from the teacher's perspective, it's like really sad for them, honestly, and it's gonna like demoralize their feelings. And coming from the fact a lot of teachers, especially the ones that I have, they're overqualified for being a teacher. And with the amount of the like significantly less money they get that they get from this job compared to what they could get with the degree and education that they have, it's not a good thing. And I'm thinking, we were mentioning this earlier about how our APUSH teacher quit, and this woman had a law degree, and she quit because a teachers don't get paid a lot, and as well as the fact that she was overqualified. And with this new thing of not being able to give at least $40 extra in overcompensation and compensation, it's not good for them, and it's not really, it just shows that teachers are just getting even worse treatment than they deserve.
Other comments?
Yeah, and to kind of bounce off what Ashana said, like it really like especially about our APUSH teacher, the fact that teachers just don't get paid and appreciated that well, especially in a country where education matters so much, and that should be the foundation and like a focus of every country to have. Like even Tallahassee Democrat calls this a slap in the face, being like not even being given like $40 extra. Like, well, I didn't necessarily understand if you meant like $40 is in the teachers denied $40 because it wouldn't make a difference to them, or like legislators said that $40 like
Well,
we shouldn't give it to them.
let me just throw something in here, in there. The amount of money that the district said they had to give them was $40, what amount to $40 a month, okay, which is really less than $10 a week. Now, there is another component here that we need to look at, and I was going to say this when everyone finished. We really should be saying, how do you feel about vouchers? Because what is happening, from the way that I understand it, is that the student population for Leon County Public Schools is going down. And it's going down because charter schools and private schools are getting vouchers. And these vouchers come out of the Leon County Public Schools pot. So when you have these charter schools and you have these private schools that may have, X amount of students, and they take that voucher out, then it only leaves so much money for the teachers to get paid. Now, that's the way that I understand it. You all can correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, that's the way I'm just kind of encapsulating it and just to a little, but that's what's going on, that the money is not there because the money goes to charter schools and private schools.
Yeah, I mean, you took something I was about to say right out of my mouth perfectly, so thank you. Because I just wanted to add that I was recently talking to some students who go to a private school, and I asked them about this charter program, and their response was quite interesting to me because they were heavily against it. They were like, "Yes, this benefits us, but we don't need it, that like we have the opportunity to go to these schools." And I think it just perfectly represents how like our country isn't valuing educating everyone right now. It's valuing educating those who, are already doing well for themselves and are already in a fortunate position. And if this continues, I think that just furthers, the inability for people to honestly to follow the path that we consider the American dream of, starting from not too much and being able to work your way up, because education is the path to that. And if we get rid of that route, then that gets rid of, the ability for anyone to be able to really make a big impact.
Other comments?
And I think the awareness about how much the teachers actually have to work is kind of on both ends, both of the students and legislatures, because I think legislatures are really thinking about the set hours that they put in place, which I think also students don't really know about. But if a teacher has a sixth period, then they have to stay until the end of seventh. And if they have a seventh, they have to stay an extra hour until after seventh period is over. And I think a lot of people just don't think about that fact, and they assume that, oh, when class is over, the teacher leaves. But realistically, they have to stay at school for another hour after all the students leave. And that's on the students' like perspective. And then from the legislature's perspective, I think they don't really understand that when extracurriculars and club activities become involved, these teachers really stay for at like a really long time. Like today, we had a Mayo meeting for our competition that we are hosting at our school on Saturday, and our teacher, he's been staying until like 4 and 5 p.m. like this entire week, and tomorrow he's gonna have to stay longer, and then Saturday he's gonna be at school the whole day. And there are just things that the legislatures, they don't account for, things that they aren't aware of.
Good point. Good point. You know, it's easy for them to make proposals and set these laws and on fees and stuff, but they haven't walked in those shoes. They really don't know what is involved in being a teacher. And I would think that educational funding should be a higher priority at the local and state levels. I don't know what you all think about that, but that's what I would. It just doesn't seem to be a priority at all. Any other
And
comment? Yeah, Xavier.
if anyone else wants to say something first,
No,
but
go right
I was
ahead.
just going to quickly note that most teachers who do these extracurricular activities are unable to get paid after hours time for it, and it has to be something that you specifically like argue for in order to get that support, which is really difficult to do. So most teachers who do this are doing it entirely for their free time, and they're supporting these clubs that, you know, have not just been like something fun for students to do, but are things like math competitions and debate programs that are training people to just, you know, understand the world better. And for such selfless work, it's such a shame that they don't get anything in return.
Well, that's true. That's true. I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts for a moment because we're coming up on break time. But when we come back, we'll talk about that H-1B visa restriction. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you with the Politics Wrap team. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I've got five dynamic students from Rickards IB High School. We are now going to look at the H-1B visa restrictions. New federal restrictions would require foreign-born individuals to pay $100,000 before obtaining an H-1B visa, work visa. At universities like Florida State University and FAMU University, where international faculty and graduate students play a key role, the change could have serious consequences. And recently, Governor DeSantis has said that he thinks those who are on these visas need to be relieved of their jobs. They need to be fired. They need to move on because we need to just have Americans in these positions. What do you think? How might this policy affect research and innovation and even diversity on university campuses? If we're going to get rid of all of our international faculty and graduate students. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I think the perfect example to explain this is one of my best friends is here because his mom is doing their a program at FSU, and so he's just going to high school, and he's one of the brightest people I know, and I can already tell you that, I'm sure he'll end up going on to be one of the, really influential person and will do great things in STEM. And I can just immediately see how programs like this would make him coming to the US impossible. And even just from an economic standpoint and not a, personal one, like those are the people we're losing out on. Are
Right.
those people that are like the brilliant people from around the world that come here because they see a hope and then they support America and bring America even further. And we're just bringing ourselves down and bringing the world down.
Other comments, thoughts?
So I think coming with what Governor DeSantis said about relieving people of their jobs if they're on the H-1B visa, I think that's really that's an asinine response. And it's not that they shouldn't be released, because in this country, many researchers and people that advance the science sphere of this country, many of them are usually immigrants or children of immigrants. And it's not going to be good for them if all the international residents of this country are not able to arrive into this country because of financial burdens such as $100,000. And $100,000, India, an example, that's a lot of money. And especially in a country like India, because $1 is like 87 rupees in India. And compared to $100,000, that's a lot. That many Indians that are coming to this country for a better future education cannot afford. And many universities, even if a university or an employer provides that money, many colleges, I don't know if I'm right about this, but I don't think colleges have the funding for this to give every international faculty or
Oh
international
no.
students to fund $100,000 for each of them to arrive.
And I
So I
think
don't think that's beneficial.
I was going to say, and I think previously the fee was like $200 and some change, 225, 250. I can't think of it exactly, but it was something like that. So we're going from 225, 250 to $100,000 to get an H-1B work visa. I mean, what message does it send about my America's priorities in education and immigration? If you're saying this, you want to come here, you're going to have to pay, or whoever is sponsoring you, where you're going to be working, is going to have to pay $100,000. Now, what message does that send? I'm asking you all, what do you think? I mean, if that's the message, what are we saying?
As a message, that really just shows, as you were saying, America's priorities, how we are really just focusing on the economic prospect of everything. Even tying back to Trump's his citizenship gold card, I don't remember the exact price, but it was I'm pretty sure it was like 10 million or $100 million. He was basically selling citizenship at a high price, and that kind of looks like this HB1 100K visa fee to literally just come to the United States. And on be like to look at what DeSantis has said, I think that that's so disrespectful to discuss that and undermine the amount of people who've already been working in the United States on an HB1 on an H-1B visa. And as stated by it's such a generalization that America is like a salad bowl and has all these different cultures, and this is the land of the immigrants. And to completely just disregard that for an alternate agenda is absolutely insane to me.
Yeah, building off of what Sauce said, I do agree with her, and I think it's not only that they want a profit, but it's also that they want to make the country very exclusive in the way that they're saying that, oh yeah, only people who have the ability to have this amount of money, the people who have this amount of, they're privileged. You're basically saying that this country is only for privileged people, and I think that sends a very negative, international message.
Any other
And
comments? Yeah.
yeah, just for people, to think about as well. the fact that Einstein, who's one of our most celebrated scientists, was born in Germany, the fact that Oppenheimer, who, there was recently a movie about because he had such a large impact, his dad moved to America when he was 17 and, had low-paying jobs. And you see people like that that are like the foundation of what you see in science from America, right? And that's what you see as the vision of American science. And it's just clear that, so much of it comes from the fact that we are an international presence, and that power means that we can bring together the best minds to do great things. And if we're telling the best minds that they have to pay ridiculous sums of money to come here, then they're going to choose to go to other places. And that will just mean that once again, the really powerful power, like the power of America, of everyone coming together, is just going to be lost.
Yeah, well, my question, you've kind of led into it, Xavier. Could it make the U.S. less attractive to global talent? I mean, how is it going to affect our research and the innovation and diversity on university campuses? That's just some, another avenue to think about. Are we now less attractive? Who was going to want to come here? We have all these restrictions.
There's definitely going to be more immigration to other countries other than the US because, like, obviously, $100,000 is a lot, especially coming as a new person to a country that you probably don't know a lot about and you probably don't have any money in the first place. Many it's going to be more, other countries are going to look more prospective and they're going to have more of these innovations that we could have had because of such a high, I would like a, such a high fee, I would say it's not going to be good for us. And then other countries, like many people go to the UK, Europe, like any country in Europe, and they go to Canada instead, and that would just make get like make those countries more advanced than we would be if only we didn't impose this $100,000 fee. And it's not very, I don't really like this idea, but
Yeah, well, it's not, enforced yet, but that's what the talk is. Any other comments on this?
and Dr. Hallifield, you said to us, you asked us who'd want to come to a country if there are so many restrictions. And I strongly fear that that may be the point of what they're doing.
I mean, yeah. That's a good way to control the population. Okay, well, moving right along. On October 1st, the US federal government began a shutdown after Congress failed to pass 12 appropriation bills that fund government operation through September 30th. What are the short and long-term effects of a shutdown? And when I say long-term effects, I'm talking about on the communities, on families, on students. What do you see as the fallout from this shutdown?
I'd say the as far as long term, one of the biggest things is that, especially, like, I think that when you have heavy debate in Congress that leads to a shutdown because of disagreement, that can be a positive because it can mean that you're talking about really impactful things. And when you talk about things that are so impactful, that means that normally you're talking about a great change. I think that when you look at the long-term impact of this, though, I struggle to see that as strongly because the disputes aren't large-scale issues. It's just an inability for anyone to agree on simple stuff. And that's what worries me most.
And Especially, I think it's also just so unfair how, in the midst of the shutdown, people like members of Congress still receive their pay while other people, other federal employees, during the shutdown, they are usually sent home without pay. And
Right.
this just also shows so much like another issue of how America's priorities are mostly economic at the moment, even when they necess not they shouldn't necessarily be solely about that. And there's also so much speculation about people preparing for SNAP benefits, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, they're I'm pretty sure that that's something we're going to be
Yeah, that
discussing
was
later
my
on, but
next question. That's fine. We can go into it now
Yeah, but
because of
it's just insane how members of Congress are still receiving their pay, but people who need benefits because they will not be able to eat will not be able to receive those benefits because of the shutdown, while members of Congress who are not even working because the government is shut down because of their actions still receive their pay, are still able to go home, eat their meals, and have a nice day.
And have their health insurance and everything. Well, I'm glad you kind of you made a good segue to for me to go into this, because over 40 million, the last thing I heard was really it was about 42 million people will go hungry due to lack of funding for SNAP, which is Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. And I think approximately it's 3 million Floridians will be impacted. So that's what we are talking about when we're talking about funding stopping. Now, I kept trying to listen before we started this taping today, because I had heard earlier that there may be some movement and that the president was looking at ways to continue some of the funding of really necessary programming, but I haven't heard anything. And what is it? Thursday at 4:35 o'clock. So I don't know. But anyhow, what do you think about that? I mean, what do you think about the all these people are going to be going without food? You know?
I
And
think it.
it's not just. I think I just have to throw this out there. I think, you know, they think that it's mainly black and brown people that get these various supplements. And it's not. Well, they'll find out, you know, because they're going to find out this, their constituents are going to be raising hell. People are not, people, there are a lot of people who need SNAP, who don't have the employment, or don't have, are in the pay grade to be able to support their families. So we're talking about lots of children. I don't know the exact number of that, but at least 20 million children who will not be fed.
And it's crazy to think that this government shutdown initially started because of a dispute over funding allocated towards like Medicaid, Medicare, and everything. And now they're still not able, like after not reaching any sort of conclusion or any sort of solution to that issue, they're creating more issues with the government shutdown by not sending economic benefits to SNAP programs.
Any other comments? Let me hear from some of the rest of you. Where do you sit on this? What do you think?
I think it just says a lot that the SNAP, funding that people receive is like they said like 180 something per month is I think what the average is. And it's really not that much if you think about it, like what they have to live off of. 180 isn't something where they can, live like super comfortably, but it's something that still helps them survive on a day-to-day basis. And I think it really shows that they haven't even, like, from what I hear, they haven't clarified anything about like what's gonna happen to the funding. Like, is it when are they gonna get the funding back? Because they're not getting it like November 1st, right? Do they like get it on the first of every month? And they said that there wasn't like any clarification on what would happen to the funding that they didn't receive last month. Like, would it come back? Like, there's absolutely no reassurance that the people are being given. And I think it's everything is just they lack. Again, it goes back to the fact about how exclusive this country is becoming and how it seems like they really don't care a whole lot about people who need the money. And they're just trying to like increase the quality of life for people who already have like more than what they need.
I think that that is a really perfect way of summing it up. And it makes me think a lot about how there's this perspective, I think, in America that we're seeing more and more where, you know, people complain about the homeless issues that we have in some big cities. And the solution that every, you know, other country that has successfully dealt with these problems has had is to support those people and to help them get into a better place. And yet there's a refusal from, you know, American politicians to credit that. And instead, the solution is always that, you know, people need to work on themselves. And even though that clearly doesn't work, and it's to make aggressive architecture against them. And then it's to make programs that move people who are homeless to other cities so that they can be out of sight and out of mind. Mm-hmm. And it's just more and more clear that America is unwilling to see the solution and follow it because that isn't what is the easiest.
Yeah. Well, I asked you to hold your thoughts because I got one more question for you. But you're tuned in to 411 Teen, and I'm talking with the Politics Rap Team. We're looking at the gridlock that's going on. We're going to take a brief break, but I'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
Politics Rap Team, I have one more question that I thought that I wanted to pose before we go into our next subject about just the government shutdown. What does all of this political gridlock, how does it affect public confidence in government? I mean, given what's going on, they can't meet, they can't get together, they can't talk. I mean, they're not going to fund anything. It's back and forth and back and forth. And how does it impact the confidence of the government?
I think that it's also clear to point out that it's not like people can't talk. There's a refusal.
They won't talk.
And, you know, this whole issue wouldn't have even happened if both sides got together and said, we respect your opinion and let's find a good balance on this. But both statements are this side wants to keep the shutdown going. This side doesn't want to fund the people. This side. And so it's making it into this very like something that can't be reasoned with when instead, you know, the whole point of having, you know, multiple perspectives is to find the perfect middle spot. And in this case, that's just not possible because nobody is willing to budge. And so it's very clear that, you know, they'd rather be perfectly right and get their way than make sure that the people of America are happy.
Yeah, and to kind of take that and segue into our next topic, I think that the government being shut down while the White House is under construction and building a grand ballroom is kind of insane.
Well, how do you all feel about the grand ballroom and tearing down the East Wing that was said it was not going to be touched?
I think that that's honestly such like, it really just seems like you're mocking the American people because the government is not in order at the moment. And it seems like you're just kind of parading around wealth, especially to our administration, because they've torn down such an iconic part of the White House that's held so many like memorable events to think about. And now they're making a grand ballroom. And I'm pretty sure that Trump had mentioned that there was supposed to be something like pleated in gold, or the room was supposed to be pleated in gold or whatever. I don't know if that was his office or if it was this instance as well, but it just seems so crazy to think about how they're not providing for the American people, but providing and catering to themselves.
Yeah. Other comments?
I find it very funny how similar this is to why the French Revolution started. Because the whole reason the French Revolution started is because of economic hardship. We're currently in a government shutdown where people are inevitably not going to have like benefits that they would get from the government. And then they're literally making a ballroom in the White House with money that we have, apparently, because I guess $36 trillion in debt is not enough.
Mm-mm.
And I find it very ironic how similar this is to the start of the French Revolution.
And I think that it's also really bizarre that other corporations are also funding the construction project at the White House, like big corporations. And that also just lets you see who really, like, quote unquote, runs America. And thinking about all of that, and also thinking that some of the money that's also being put into construction is taxpaying money, is absolutely insane. It's ridiculous to me, at least, because you're using American taxpaying money to build a grand ballroom at the White House instead of putting that money towards actually helping the people.
And supposedly it wasn't going to be taxpayer money. All of this, well, Trump said all of this was going to be funded privately by private donations. Well, even if that's the case, so are they buying a piece of the White House? Those who contribute? What message does this send?
Well, in fact, it sends a whole interesting message, because following Trump's trend of making executive orders that are not constitutionally valid, this project, from my understanding at least, is also not constitutionally valid, as it would have to be approved by Congress, given that it would be an edit to falls under, I think the White House falls under like a national park, not exactly, but under this similar department. And so because of that, you know, it's just another sign that currently our government is willing to play outside the lines when it benefits their plan. And while right now this is not a huge negative, you know, since it's not funded by the people, it's a private effort, it's just another sign that there's been a loss of respect for the rules that we've put in place to avoid things like dictatorships and, you know, other problems like that.
Do you, well, and as I ask this, I think I already know the answer, because they don't pay any attention to any of the rules anyway. But I was going to ask you, do you think that should reforms be put in place to prevent any kind of future shutdown? Because all of this is coming from, you know, shutdown. We're spending over $300 million on this new addition. And as you were saying, Xavier, that people are starving. They don't have food to eat. And this is what we are putting our money on. So would a reform, how do we address this?
A reform would be probably great, like set a precedent, because I'm pretty sure there was a government shutdown not like a little less than 8 years ago, like about this. And it's not like a government shutdown is something new that's never happened before.
No.
They could have just like, at this point, they could just set precedents of what to expect and what to do when something like this happens. Because if it's happened once, it's going to happen again and again and again. So at this point, yeah, just make reforms, like have like maybe like a plan. Like, you know, when people have like a doomsday planner, basically have like that and have it where this is going to happen. Know what to expect. if it's possible to prevent, try to do this, yada yada yada, like that.
And even though I'm saying reforms, I start, just think about it. The administration pays no attention to any type of law or rule anyway. They just head forward and do it because they figure by the time it goes to court, you know, they will have done what they want to do anyway.
I'm curious how many people, how many politicians could, like, if you ask them a question on American documents like the Constitution or the, or like any like law or statute in this country, I'm curious how many people would actually like be able to answer it. Because at this point, considering how much is contradicting a lot of American, like US laws or like anything mentioned or stated, I'm very concerned about this at this point.
And going back for a second,
sure.
To the did I interrupt some?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay. And going back for a second to the idea of a reform, there's so many issues with a reform from my understanding that I don't know exactly how you would place one.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the big issues with the shutdown is that there's kind of a threat to not having anything happen, right? Because that shuts down the country, which is what we're seeing. And so the only reason that the bills have any kind of, like the more disputed bills have any possibility of getting passed is because of this threat, is because there's this worry that there's a situation where, you know, it never gets passed at all. And so this is the only way to get it through is to have it as part of this massive bill that, you know, will never get passed as one whole because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that any type of reform policy is going to have to involve cutting off pieces of this bill and making them separate, which is really difficult, as the entire point of what both parties want is to use this bill and in all its entirety as, you know, as I said, a threat of you, this has to get passed, so you have to side with us. And that's the big issue that I see.
Okay. Any other comments? Well, if not, we'll go to Bad Bunny. Bad Bunny and the Super Bowl controversy. Puerto Rican artist Bad Bunny, Benito Antonio Martinez Ocasio, will headline the 2026 Super Bowl halftime show. The first artist to perform in it this entirety in Spanish. While many applaud the decision as a win for cultural diversity, others are protesting, with some officials even saying that they're going to have ICE there, you know, arresting people. The ICE agents will be present at the event. What does the backlash about America's evolving identity and attitudes toward inclusion, what does this say? What does this backlash reveal, you know?
I think the first thing that it reveals is that, well, going off of something that Shauna commented on earlier, I think, the fact that President Trump's first response to this was that he wanted to have a word with the president of Puerto Rico, you've seen that comment by him.
Mm-hmm.
and the fact that, going back to the idea that, you know, today more than ever, there's a lot of people elected that don't know enough about the world to probably be in the positions that they're in. And the concern that that gives for, you know, while they might bring a lot of change, is that change entirely positive? Do they have the right mindset to lead? But moving this back into the Super Bowl, it just once again underlines the fact that this shouldn't be an issue. There should be no issue with having more representation and voices in, you know, he's a popular artist. This isn't some crazy extremist who no one has ever heard of.
He's popular. Three Grammys and all types of accolades. Right. I didn't even go into all that. But
and
you're right.
So it's just ridiculous to see him as anything but a perfectly qualified person.
And especially what you were saying about Trump saying that he's going to go and speak to the president of Puerto Rico in air quotes. I saw people tweet back to him and say like, I think that's you.
I
And
know.
yeah, it was so funny to me. But I think overall, Bad Bunny performing at the Super Bowl, which is one of the USA's most largely streamed televised events of the entire year, is just so iconic because even amongst ICE being so prevalent in society and of course all that controversy that happened earlier this year and it's still being a huge problem, he's honestly just giving them one big smile and saying, I'm still here, I'm still here to represent.
Any other
I
comment?
think
Go
the
ahead.
way that they're saying, oh, I don't even know who this person is, why are they performing? It really could go two ways, but both ways are really bad, like in the way that they're viewed. Because if they're saying, oh, yeah, I know who this person is, but I'm just like acting like I don't know who they are, is really showing that you're just trying to undermine other ethnicities. And if these legislatures and if Trump really doesn't know who Bad Bunny is, maybe they really just don't have interest in the Americans because this is such a big figure and such a popular artist. So really, if you don't know that much about Americans, like what could you really do for a population you know nothing about?
You know, my question is, and whoever's going to go, let me just throw this in there and you can add it. When we look at this controversy, is it about culture and politics, or is it even something deeper? And I'm just throwing that out there, but whoever was going to speak, go right ahead. I'd like to hear where you sit on this.
Yeah, I was gonna look at things from, just a perspective of maybe trying to take away the political lens for a second to just say, last year, I believe it was Usher, who did the Super Bowl, and I knew maybe two of his songs going into that performance, and I remember that there was some drama because people were like, "Really? Is he gonna be the guy who's gonna have such a great performance?" And that is what I think. The criticism should be here. Maybe someone thinks that Bad Bunny isn't their favorite artist, and that's fine, and that's
Oh,
great
yeah.
because, everyone can have their opinions in that way. And, that's the perspective that people should have, is this is a performance at a show that is part of a game. And, to try and take it to this other level of, oh, it's an action against America, which not only doesn't make much sense given that, he was born on American soil, but more than
And
that,
he's
the
a
fact.
citizen. Yes. I mean, not to interrupt you, Xavier, but one of the first
Yeah.
things was, well, who is he? And he's only going to speak in Spanish. Should language be a barrier to performing on a national stage? I'm just throwing these, as you all are talking, I'm thinking about these things.
I especially not when the second language of the United States, the second most spoken language in the United States is Spanish. I don't think that should be an issue at all.
I have so many friends in Miami who speak, Spanish as well as they do English, and they're citizens born here for generations, and that's just part of their culture. And I know people who live in Texas who live at schools where both languages are taught because it just makes the most sense. And I think that, this just once again shows that really this is not an issue of the music or the artist, but of the fundamental, divide right now and just the racism in our country that is scarily prevalent.
Well said. Any other comments, thoughts about exactly what is happening? Well, I guess we are almost at a time where it is time out. And I do want to say thank you to you all. You've been very candid and very open. And you know, your thought, you really thought outside of the box, which is something that's good. So it is literally time out, and you've been listening to Politics Rap, featuring high school students from the International Baccalaureate Program at James S. Rickards High School. Their insights remind us that civic awareness and critical thinking begin early and that young voices deserve to be heard on issues shaping our communities and our nation. I want to say thank you to my politics team, and thank you for the privilege of your time and ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Evan Rossi. If you would like to participate in the 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Team at wfsu.org.